The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and joined by my co-host today, Nathan Glidewell. Nathan, glad to have you back. As Gray was back last week for the first time in a minute, you're back for the first time in a minute, so glad to have you back on the show. And it would be... I would be remiss if I didn't start your first show back with a food beverage.
Go ahead, story. Bring it on.
So according to new analytics data provided by Beverage Digest, Dr. Pepper surpassed longstanding runner-up Pepsi to become the second most popular soda in the United States in 2023, behind the top favorite Coke. Nathan, are you surprised by this at all, with Dr. Pepper passing Pepsi?
No, this isn't surprising. This is a long time coming. You talk about the number of people in the country who just crave Dr. Pepper constantly. It's their all-time favorite soda. And honestly, it competes very well with Coke in most cases. Most of the time you go into a restaurant, it's a classic. You ask for Dr. Pepper and they have Mr. Pibb. Like, you don't want to settle for that. And I think this just goes back to Pepsi having to compete against Coke. And now they're having to compete against a brand of Dr. Pepper, where it's just this two-way battle that they have ended up losing. You go back to the collaborations Pepsi has made with the number of restaurants they have bought to make sure they have their products in certain restaurants. So it doesn't matter how much you own or how much you push the product. Your product's not going to beat out what other people are offering. And Dr. Pepper is just one of those all-time favorite sodas out there that people are going to constantly want and crave.
I think with Dr. Pepper, they've done a great job diversifying what they offer. You talk about the cream soda they started doing. Mm-hmm. How long? That was like 5-6 years ago, something like that. That's my favorite Dr. Pepper to drink. They just released the coconut, creamy coconut. So, I mean, they have that. They have tons of flavors. They've done deals with other companies. I believe they had a deal with some beef jerky brand where it's Dr. Pepper flavored. I think that they're a lot better than Pepsi when it comes to getting into different product lines, partnering with restaurants, the Whataburger Dr. Pepper shake.
I mean, yeah, I think they had the Bluebell Dr. Pepper ice cream or something like that. I might be thinking of something else, but it's just all over the place, and they've done a great job with their networking. And I think that's where Pepsi comes up short a little bit, because they have Taco Bell and all these other different restaurants. But let's be honest, they're not restaurants that people constantly go to. And most restaurants nowadays are lined in with Coke, and then they also have Dr. Pepper on. So it's just a more widely available product than Pepsi is.
Yeah, I think the last thing Pepsi really notably did was the Pepsi Peeps flavored thing. That's like the last thing that they really did.
That was big.
Yeah, but you talk about Taco Bell, that's more Mountain Dew based than it is Pepsi. So
yeah,
yeah, but I think Dr. Pepper, it was a long time coming for them to get second on this list. And I wouldn't be surprised if we're sitting here in the next 10 years and they've surpassed Coke with how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm moving on to some NBA here, Nathan, shifting away from the food stories you love to hate. Per ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, Dan Hurley turned down a 6-year, $70 million offer from the Los Angeles Lakers in favor of chasing a third straight title at UConn. The deal would have made Hurley one of the top 6 highest paid coaches in the NBA if he had accepted it. Do you agree with Hurley's decision to go ahead and decline this offer, Nathan, and stay at UConn?
I will say for one time, I do agree with Dan Hurley in this situation. And I think you have to look at the bigger picture, especially going back in the past with what the Lakers have done with two coaches previously. and the fact that every single one they seem to hire while LeBron has been there has been fired after a short time there. The contract wasn't the issue, because 6 years, $70 million. I mean, obviously that's a lot of money. That's a long time. Walking a coach down for that long, that amount of time in itself is just like a whole risk. I'm surprised the Lakers even considered giving him that long of a contract, speaking of that their last few coaches have just been thrown out the door willy-nilly. But I think it also goes back to what Dan Hurley has built at UConn, how much success they've had, back-to-back national champs, and they continue to bring great talent in. And it has turned UConn into, I mean, they've been a blue blood, but it has returned them to where they were in the past with teams with like Kemba Walker. So I think that was the biggest decision for him, was the fact that UConn is in such a great spot right now. And then you look at where the Lakers are, kind of on the downslope. And not really, he wouldn't be stepping into a great situation. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to here is Hurley would have probably had to change his coaching style. I mean, you see all the highlights and stuff of him yelling at his players, the practice highlights, him just absolutely going after the guys, coaching them up. He's pushed players in the middle of a game. The coaching style he has would not translate to the NBA. I mean, can you imagine him yelling at LeBron in practice?
There's no yelling at LeBron.
I really don't think that would go over well. These guys are adults. Dan Hurley's an adult. I really don't think the way he coaches his players, which I don't have a problem with, the way he coaches his college players. Obviously, it works because he's won two national championships in the past 2 years. It just wouldn't have translated to the NBA and coaching those players who think they know more and know more than their head coaches, which has been proven in L.A., with the carousel that we've gone through these past couple of years. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the Lakers front office. That's a whole other headache. Can't build a roster. LeBron James is probably gone in 1 to 2 years. He could be gone this offseason if he wants to. He hasn't made that decision. So you go into there and you're going to have to depend on the front office to build your roster, where UConn Hurley had the ability to build his roster. And he's done that pretty well. He did it this offseason with what he did through the transfer portal and recruiting, got that good five-star small forward when he documented from Indiana, got Aiden Mullaney. This is the countless guys he's got coming off the bench now. Dan Hurley just had more control at UConn. They worshiped the ground the man walked on. I can't blame them for that. And in L.A., you look since 2011, which is when Phil Jackson retired, no head coach has lasted more than 3 seasons. And Dan Hurley's already been at UConn he's been out there since 2018. So the lifespan of Dan Hurley at UConn would probably have been longer than it would have been in L.A. It's been proven. The stats show it. Dan Hurley, it just wouldn't have made sense for him to transition to the NBA. But I think he will eventually do that. And I think it would probably be either the New York Knicks or Brooklyn Nets when he goes there, because he has that connection up north. I think it'd be more the Knicks than anything. So don't be surprised here in the next 2-3 years if Dan Hurley does land in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So now that Hurley's off the table for the Lakers, who do you think they go after now? Shams tweeted before that, Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted that Hurley was getting pursued by the Lakers, that the Lakers had zeroed in on JJ Redick to be the next head coach. That sort of, I guess now it was on the back burner. Now it's on the highlight that they might hire him. James Borrego has had two interviews with the Lakers. Sam Cassell's been mentioned. Mike Anori, the assistant coach for the Timberwolves, has been rumored. Who do you think Lakers end up hiring here, Nathan? Or who do you think they should hire?
I think they're going to end up hiring JJ Redick. It's the unpopular pick between the both of us. We both realize where JJ Redick is. He is not a coaching style. I mean, he can break down film well. He knows what he's doing. But when it comes to coaching, how well can he coach? I think that's the biggest question. That would be his first head coaching job. And not only that, it's in one of the most important franchises in the league. And that'd be a huge step for him. I don't think he is quite ready for that. If you're going to step into that kind of role, you're stepping into a head coaching role with a smaller franchise like the Hornets or something like that. So it would be a massive step, but I think they will end up hiring him just because I think LeBron's comfortable with him. And I think LeBron realizes he will have more control of the team if a guy like JJ Redick is the head coach. I think James Borrego would be a great selection for him, especially with what he's done in the past. I think he's a little bit more experienced, obviously, and I like his coaching style. So I think he would be a better fit than what Reddit offers currently. But I think they're going to end up going with a more stylish selection.
I think they probably will too, just because Redick's relationship with LeBron. I know it's been mentioned that AD's not that big of a fan of hiring Redick. He's more leans towards more Borrego. But I think Redick would fit more with the players. They get along more with him. They can relate more. Redick only retired a few years ago, and he has a great basketball mind. You listen to him talk on TNT. You listen to what he says. I mean, he has a great mind. He's very well spoken. I think there would be more of a learning curve with JJ Redick compared to somebody like a Borrego or a Cassell or a Nori. And that's going to be the big thing, is can they be willing to let JJ Redick sort of learn. I think it'd be more beneficial for them to hire Redick as more of an assistant coach, maybe, and hire a guy that they're going to let sit there and have Redick kind of waiting in the wings and learn from that guy, whether that be an older head coach or if he's the assistant to Borrego or Cassell or Nori, whoever they end up hiring. I think it'd be a smarter decision for not only the Lakers, but Redick as well, to be able to learn. It's just, it's a difficult situation to come in to a franchise like the Lakers, have the expectations of championship or bust as the first time head coach. And you look, like I mentioned with Hurley, LeBron's probably got 2 years max. And once he's gone, can Redick do something with the roster that are probably built around AD and some host of free agents they bring in there? If they have the money, they don't have draft picks. So I think it'll come down to probably Redick getting hired, but I would personally go with the more experienced person for my franchise with LeBron heading towards the end of his career, Brego, Cassell. I would personally hire Mike Anori, but it looks like he might be taking the Cleveland Cavaliers job. He's from the Ohio area. He's from Ohio. So he'd probably be more willing to take that job than he would the Lakers.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with this decision on who they hire, it's more to compliment LeBron, because LeBron already probably has pictures of leaving LA this offseason, depending on who they have as their next head coach. Given what the front office has done, they've really been an appeaser to LeBron. Fired Frank Vogel 2 seasons after he won a championship. I mean, it's been really interesting to watch the dynamic of the Lakers the past few seasons. Even with Darvin Ham this season, I felt like he didn't do a terrible job, as people say. I don't think he deserved to just be fired like he did. I think it goes back to what the front office did in the offseason. They didn't really improve the team much. The lack of depth was a big thing. And the fact that everyone just expects LeBron to do everything when honestly he just doesn't have the same amount of energy as he did earlier on in his career. And that's the biggest thing. So I think the Redick hire would be more to get LeBron to stay just because of the connection those two have.
Yeah, I don't think the firing of Frank Vogel and Darvin Ham were as warranted as they should have been. Both those guys, I think, are pretty good head coaches. It just came down to it's championship or bust in LA, and those guys. Darvin Ham didn't win a championship, and Frank Vogel, after winning that one, kind of faltered. So it's just, you have a very, very short leash. I think the shortest leash of any professional coaching job in sports, even the Cowboys. It feels like Jerry Jones gives those coaches a long leash to use. Mike McCarthy has had a pretty long one. Jason Garrett had a pretty long one. So the Lakers really do not take kindly to not doing good in the regular season and not winning an NBA championship. And it does look like they're trying to involve Anthony Davis into decision-making when it comes to their head coach. And as I mentioned, he favors Brego. So maybe that's who they go with. Hopefully for AD's sake, they do go with him, because I don't think JJ Redick is going to work for AD in the post-LeBron era, especially if this front office continues to do what they've been doing in the offseason, giving contracts to players that don't work out. I mean, look at last offseason, Gabe Vincent, Jackson Hayes, Cam Reddish. None of those guys had an impact in the playoffs at all. So I think this front office, more than anything, has to do better. Not their head coaches, the front office. But it feels like the head coaches take the brunt of it because they get put in a crappy situation. All right, according to Front Office Sports, TNT is in negotiation with the NBA for a fourth possible media rights package. Warner Bros. Discovery is looking to secure a smaller, less expensive package of games that can include some regular season and some playoff games. Nathan, I talked about this by myself a couple of weeks ago about TNT possibly not getting the rights to NBA anymore as they've negotiated rights to get some college football playoff games. How important is it for TNT and the NBA to keep this partnership going?
I think it's very important. I think it'd be at the top of the priority list. You have the connection TNT has had with the NBA for several years and really popularized it because of the accessibility the network offers to watching NBA games. You know, you talk about the number of restrictions people have to go through now to just watch a single NBA game. It is impossible. ESPN offers a few, but TNT has always been the bigger network that has offered the bigger games. And especially going into the playoffs, the number of playoff coverages they've had, you break down the crew they've had, Ernie Johnson. I mean, I don't even have to name everyone because everyone already knows inside the NBA. Everyone's already watched all these broadcasts. The number of former players that have been just all over TNT. And I think it's the biggest thing to continue to have some sort of package with them to where the accessibility is there for fans to watch. on TNT. Not only that, but to still be able to see these former players give their commentary, because they have a great insight on what is going on with the game of basketball. And I think that has been the biggest thing. I get what TNT has tried to do with getting playoff games for college football. But as far as NBA goes, this is one of the most important things, and hopefully they are able to secure some type of package.
Yeah, just worth noting that TNT operates NBA TV and NBA.com for the NBA. So if they lose TNT, that had to be entirely reworked, whether that be through ESPN or Amazon or NBC, whatever, whoever they partnered with. I think those are the three. Yeah, ESPN, NBC, and Amazon are who they've agreed with so far. So one of those companies have to come in and rework that entirely. And I wouldn't be that bad reworking NBA TV, because like you mentioned, Nathan, you watch, try to get NBA TV and you're it's in a blackout. Oh. I mean, as a Hawks fan, I'm always in a blackout. I can't watch the Hawks game unless they're on nationally on TNT or an ESPN or ABC.
I couldn't watch a playoff game because of the blackout. It's awful.
Don't even get me started with baseball, because they are 10 times worse than the NBA when it comes to blackouts. I don't understand limiting the accessibility to your games when you want to get fans excited about your sport. I don't get that. I think getting with TNT and getting a deal is important to get more accessibility to your fans, like you mentioned, Nathan, and to keep that crew together, because the ESPN pregame and postgame crew, well, I think they do a pretty good job. They're not even remotely close to what the inside the NBA does. The moments they have, it's unmatched. Something we probably won't ever see ever again with a postgame and pregame show for the NBA or any sport. So I think it's a necessity to get this crew back together, keep TNT, because it's so important to the NBA and keeping the fans happy and the players happy, because the players love inside the NBA. Moving on to the NFL here, the Pittsburgh Steelers and head coach Mike Tomlin have agreed to a 3-year extension for the 2027 season. Without that extension, he would have this would have been his final year of his contract. Nathan, with what the Steelers have gone through these past couple of years, I know they have winning seasons every year under Mike Tomlin, but they haven't reached
years.
But they haven't reached the Super Bowl or anything that in quite a long time. Do you agree with the Steelers giving him another contract extension, or should they have moved on to another head coach?
I think they should have waited. I think they should have been patient with what they did. I like what Mike Tomlin's been able to do with the Steelers. He hasn't made that next step. I mean, they continue to have winning seasons. Congratulations. If you want to be mediocre your entire career throughout the playoffs, I mean, go ahead. The Steelers hasn't really done anything to improve themselves in the offseason. No major just jumps, no trades or anything like that.
What do you mean? They signed Arthur Smith to be their offensive coordinator.
I know. That's like the greatest thing ever, right? gosh, Matt Canada 2.0. But with the Steelers, if you're not having playoff success, then why should you continue to just try to be a mediocre? Why should you continue to have this streak of not having a losing season? Because it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Your cap space is going to continuously be taken up. You're going to get players new contracts. You're giving your coach a new contract, yet you have nothing to show for it. You have no Super Bowl. You've not really won anything in the playoffs. I mean, you had to go back to when Big Ben was still there to even see remotely any success in the postseason. I think that is the biggest thing. And let's say the Steelers do miraculously improve this season and they go into the playoffs and they are able to win a few games and advance a little bit, then I say, yeah, that contract is warranted, because you're seeing a continuous improvement. But from what we've seen in the past few years, it has just been this steady, we're going to go and get this positive record, but once we do that, we're just done. And you know, some years they don't even make the playoffs. Like, if you're a Steelers fan, you should be wanting to be competing for that division. You should be wanting to compete for a Super Bowl. But instead, it's like the franchise is just fine just being mediocre. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, I understand that he's had a winning record in every year he's been a head coach, but I don't understand the fact people are happy about that. Like, congratulations, you have a winning record, but how many Super Bowls have you won? How many conference championships have you been to? And especially in the past 5 years, he doesn't have anything to show for it. And I think Mike Tomlin is a great head coach, but after 17 years, it gets to the point where players get tired of the same old voice over and over again. And I think it is at that point where the Steelers do need to move on and find a new head coach, whoever it is. And I think your point of maybe waiting and seeing, hey, we get to the playoffs, we win a few games, maybe we make the conference championship, then there's improvement. And hey, we sign up to a new contract. But to do this early, especially with the question mark at quarterback, whether it's Fields or Russell Wilson, I think is pretty idiotic. I don't think it was the greatest decision for the Steelers. Because like I said, it gets to the point after 17 years where players do end up tuning coaches out because the philosophy gets kind of old and dry and there's nothing. Now, if he had been winning like Andy Reid has been winning and he's been there for 17 years, then I don't think there's a problem with giving me a contract extension. But he hasn't won anything in the playoffs for a very long time, like since Big Ben's been there, like since Big Ben left, like you mentioned, Nathan. So I think moving on, even if you do endure a few losing seasons, it's okay. It's okay to lose a few seasons.
Happens to every single team.
These 9-8 seasons he's been having, while you have a winning season, 9-8, majority of the time, that's not good enough to make the playoffs, especially in that AFC North division, where you have the Bengals, the Browns, the Ravens, all of which are playoff contenders by themselves. So I think it's coming time for the Steelers to rebuild through the coaching and through the roster. They just don't have what it takes to win the AFC right now. You're going against Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen.
Do the Steelers would be a perfect time for a rebuild. Like, I don't understand this.
Yeah. But, you know, they want to stay with Mike Tomlin. I can't blame them. He has winning seasons with him every year. Maybe they're just kind of numb to the fact that they haven't won a Super Bowl in a minute. I don't know. But you can't ignore his success he's had. And maybe he gets something going here with Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. I hope he does because he's a great head coach. But we will see if this works out or if in years' time we're sitting here and he's fired. Nathan, with the two quarterbacks in Pittsburgh, who do you think ends up getting that starting job, Justin Fields or Russell Wilson?
I think that's a two different answer thing because I think Wilson will end up getting the job. I don't think he deserves it. I don't think he should be the front runner to get the job. I look at what Fields has done for the Bears in the past. I look at what kind of prospect he is. I think he's raw. I think he needs to be developed more. And honestly, I think that's the reason Wilson should be brought in the first place is to coach up Fields on what he should be able to do. Because we all know Fields is great athletically and he's very gifted. But when it comes to actually throwing the ball and making decisions during those plays, Wilson has been there. Russell Wilson has that kind of experience, and he can be a great teacher for Justin Fields and develop him into a great quarterback. But it's more a matter of, hey, Russell Wilson has had all this baggage in the past, and he's been able to do so much with Seattle, and people want to ignore what happened in Denver. And now they just wanted to come in and start. And I'm over here like, Russell Wilson hasn't been the same Russell Wilson since he left Seattle. And I don't think you should be wasting your time on him when you have a young Justin Fields sitting right there who is perfectly capable of winning football games for you. I mean, we saw it constantly with the Bears. He had to deal with some of the worst offensive lines, and he was still able to find ways to win games. I'm not saying he's a perfect quarterback or anything. He definitely struggles passing the ball, but at least give the man a chance.
Let me sum this up for you, Nathan. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is. Arthur Smith, your offensive coordinator, is not going to help him either way. We saw it in Atlanta. Didn't help Desmond Ritter. Didn't help Matt Ryan in the year he had him. Either of these guys, I don't think will find success under Arthur Smith. I hope they do. But with Arthur Smith's proven track record, it's not going to be good for either of them. I think Fields is definitely the long-term answer. I do think Wilson probably starts the first few weeks of the season. And if the Steelers somehow start out 4-0, 4-1, 3-1, whatever, and they're happy with that, then they stick with him. But if they start out 2-2, 1-3, 0-4, then you probably will see a switch to Justin Fields. And like I said, I think Fields is a long-term answer. The trade they made for him this offseason was very smart. Brings in a young guy that has been somewhat unproven this far, but has a lot of the intangibles you look for in a quarterback now, with the mobility, the arm strength, now the accuracy. Huge question mark. But like you said, Russell Wilson, if he coaches him up good, maybe he figures that out. And I hope he does, because he's really talented. He showed it at Ohio State. And I wish the best for him and Russell Wilson and Steelers fans with what they're about to go through this season with Arthur Smith at the offensive coordinator position, because they've already gone through so much with Matt Canada. The Florida High School Athletic Association voted unanimously last Tuesday to approve a policy allowing high school athletes to profit from NIL. It's the 36th state to allow NIL in high school athletics in some form or fashion. Nathan, what are your thoughts on states allowing high school players to get NIL money?
We are really pushing the boundaries of everything going on. and we talked about how stupid kids can be in college. have you seen High School? Have you taken? I mean, it's one thing to pay college players, and I think there is a right for them to be paid in some form or fashion within certain laws and regulations. Now, you talk about high school kids and how much money they're going to be making. I don't remember how much a high school player has really been promoted all that much through NIL. I mean, of course, you have names out there and you have certain big players, but for the most part, it should be focused around it's supposed to be a team sport at the end of the day. And there's not enough people on certain teams to warrant them being able to make NIL, especially on football teams. I mean, you can talk about basketball maybe a little bit, and baseball maybe a little bit as well, but it just seems like a really dumb decision, especially given how young kids are in high school and how many bad decisions they already make as it is without having the money, not giving them the money to do stuff. And it's like, okay, what kind of decision are they making? And I don't know how parents feel about this. I'm sure there's like two sides going at it. One saying, hey, this is going to help them in their future. And the other saying, this is going to completely ruin their work ethic. Because if you're already getting paid in high school, what's your work ethic going to look like when you say, hey, is there even a reason to go to college after I've made all this money? Should I continue to work towards going to the NFL or the NBA or the MLB or whatever? If I'm already making all this money, there's people will get complacent after a time. And I think this automatically goes and breaks recruiting as it is. And in high school athletics, you look at Florida now joining the pack, there's no Texas in there. I don't understand. I mean, there's going to be people literally moving states just to be able to make NIL in high school. And I know there's already states out there doing that. You look at Georgia, you look at California, but now it's just another state saying, hey, like you can come make money here if you're in high school and you can promote your brand and whatever. It's just not smart. It's not a smart thing to do. I'm already in disagreement about NIL and college football. I think there needs to be rules set up for that. And there's not. And then you go and look at high school and they're just going to say the same thing. Well, we're going to end up with a huge mess on our hands and there's no one really stepping up to control it.
Yeah. Let me propose this to you, Nathan. You're a 14-year-old. That's the high school freshman. And you get $5,000 for doing a NIL deal with a car dealership. What do you think happens to that $5,000 to the 14-year-old kid? Video game purchases, buying, I know $5,000 isn't enough to buy a car, but working, using NIL, the host of NIL money you have to go buy an expensive car, investing in something stupid. I don't know. But majority of high school kids, we can speak from this because we were both high school kids not that long ago, are not the most intelligent people on the earth. Anybody will agree with decisions. You. So giving these kids money and not teaching them how to spend it, how to save it, how to invest it is the dumbest thing any state can do. I think if you're going to have NIL in any state, there needs to be two things that happen. One, you need to teach them financial literacy and they have to pass the class with at least a B. I think not a C, a B. They need to be able to pass financial literacy classes and understand about everything, how to balance a checkbook, how to invest, how to use a savings account, how to use a checking account, how to write a check. You'd be surprised how many high school kids don't know how to write a check. So I think having a financial literacy course is huge if you're going to have NIL for high school players. And then second, I think might be the most important is maybe setting up sort of a trust fund or something where if you give them NIL money, it goes into an account where the players can't access that money until a certain age, let's say till they get to college or till they get out of college. Because if you don't allow them to get to that money, then they won't have to spend that money. They won't be able to waste it, which I think a lot of players might end up doing in high school is wasting that money on stupid things and looking back 10 years down the road and saying, wow, I really wasted that $5,000 on something really stupid when I could have had it to put a down payment on a house. Or I know $5,000 is enough to put on a house down payment on a house nowadays, but that adds to it, or put a down payment on a car. So I think putting it in some sort of trust fund where they can't access it and their parents can't access it, because we've seen horror stories of parents using their kids' money that they earned for themselves. So I think putting it in an account where only the kid can access it at a certain age would be really beneficial for them. I think not only for high school athletes, maybe college athletes, maybe they only get a percentage to themselves for to spend. And then they get The other percentage goes to a trust account where they can access it only after they get to the age of 18 or till they get to 21. And we just saw what happened with Shiloh Sanders at Colorado. He just declared bankruptcy. So I think it comes down to teaching these kids financial literacy, how to balance a checkbook, how to do all that type of stuff, and then putting it in a trust fund that they have access to at a certain age and not in high school. Because high school kids are really, really not the brightest people on earth. Any parent will tell you that. Any kid that's fresh out of high school and really in college right now would probably tell you I was not the smartest person in high school. And giving me X amount of dollars is probably the best thing you could do because I'd waste it. So I think this opens up a whole new can of worms that these states are really going to dig into and set up parameters. But will they? I mean, college athletics hasn't done it yet. It remains to be seen. And I think they should have waited to allow NIL and high school athletics until they get the college athletics straightened out. They should have waited in all states. But the can of worms is open now. You can't close it. Pandora's box is opened.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, you look at the number of NFL players and NBA players that as soon as they get out of the league, they spend a short amount of time in the league. All that money they made is just gone. And then they're homeless because they're in debt. They don't know how to spend their money correctly. There's no financial literacy among grown men. We're talking about high schoolers. We're talking about people who have no clue what is going on. Making that amount of money. It's insane.
Yeah, stuff has to happen. And like with the NCAA, it has taken a long time for them to do it. And with there being states with different regulations and stuff like that, it's going to be a while before high school gets in check. So I pray for these athletes that they don't get taken advantage of and don't waste their money on stupid things. Because like we've both said numerous times so far, we aren't the brightest people in high school. Anybody would say that nowadays. They weren't the smartest person when they were in high school. So I pray for them that everything works out and they don't end up homeless or anything like that. I wish them the best. And the last thing today, last Thursday, the NCAA's Playing Rules Oversight Panel approved the use of corporate logos on fields for regular season games in all divisions effective immediately. Nathan, do you think this was a smart move for the NCAA to allow this to happen?
You know, at what point do they make smart moves anymore? I don't think there's anything as a smart move anymore. This just reminds me of NFL football fields now. I mean, they're going to go ahead and see these big advertisements. And honestly, I think it kind of ruined the landscape of college football. You talked about the number of iconic fields that they have now, and then you're going to go in and across the middle of the field or somewhere it's going to be in bold, just a random brand that they're just reminding you to buy. It's all this subliminal messaging across the stadium. And I don't need that. I just want to watch football. I just want to enjoy college football. And this is, I know it's going to make a lot more money for the universities and for these athletic programs, but let's be honest. I mean, we don't want to see this.
So you're also not a fan of, they're considering allowing jersey patch or sponsorships on jersey patches. You're not a favor of that either.
No, not really. I think that also kind of ruins the current jerseys we have in college football soon.
So you don't want to see a Mr. Beast logo on a North Carolina jersey?
I am good.
What if it's like a Yeah Alabama logo on an Alabama jersey? Would that be something you'd be down with? Because it is associated with the universe?
I mean, there are some brands that are very cool and that could go on certain jerseys. But I also know that there are going to be other weird brands that are just going to be on other jerseys that are going to mess up the history behind them. And this is not the NFL. This is not the NBA. I'm not going and watching and buying jerseys that go ahead and put brands on them. I just want jerseys to be iconic.
Yeah. I think the big thing that they're doing, allowing this to happen, is these universities are going to have to start making more money, because you look at the settlement they had where it's going to allow programs to pay athletes $20 million a year. So programs and universities don't have $20 million laying around in a bank account somewhere. Some of them are even operating in a deficit. So these universities are going to have to make some sort of money, some sort of way. And this is one of the ways they landed on, is allowing corporate sponsorships on the field. And that allows some universities to make that money so they can spend it on NIL and paying their athletes and stuff like that. So I don't think we're done here yet with corporate sponsorships being places. They'll probably be on jersey patches here within the next 1 or 2 years. And you'll have to deal with it, Nathan. It's just the way the world's moving into.
I know. I have to deal with NIL already.
Like with, like I said, with NIL in states and high schools, Pandora's box is open. There's no shutting it. Well, you're paying athletes $20 million, budgeted the whole programs and all that, $20 million a year. You can't put that back in Pandora's box. It's open. You got to find the $20 million somewhere, and this is one of the ways they're going to do it. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.